You're listening to the Option Alpha podcast from OptionAlpha.com, where we show you how to make smarter trades, learn how the stock market really works, and generate consistent monthly income. Now, your host and head trader at OptionAlpha.com, Kirk Duplessis.
Hey everyone, this is Kirk here again from Option Alpha, working every single week to make this the most popular investing podcast offered online and in iTunes because it's based on one thing and one thing only, and that's helping you guys make smarter trades. So again, thank you so much for tuning in today. On today's episode, we're going to be going back to basics a little bit, but talking about how to calculate break-even prices on iron condors and on iron butterflies. I still find that this is a huge gap in people's learning curve when it comes to trading neutral risk-defined strategies. It seems like this is one that gets missed a lot, and I really want to make sure that you guys understand the ins and outs of it. And also, what we're going to be doing in the closing bell segment is taking a look at one of our trades we've done in IWM, where we've rolled our position now 2 months and have increased the credit. So now it recalculates how we look at our break-even prices after making adjustments and rolling. So I think overall, it's going to be a good overview and refresher for some of you who have maybe not reviewed some of the iron condor and iron butterfly type break-evens before. Now, I think the reason that this is so important is because, like I said, it gets really confusing at first because of the nature of the strike prices. And what I'm particularly talking about is iron butterflies. So when people first start out and maybe they sign up for a pro or elite membership and they first start following some of the trades that we're doing, they often get confused because they're selling at the money strikes for creating an iron butterfly. So if a stock is trading $100, we might sell the 100 strike call and the 100 strike put. And the assumption is, well, how can we make money on these trades? Because the stock is going to be in the money on either side. So how do we make money? And it all comes down to credits and break-evens. So that's why I think it's really important to understand how this works with regard to short strikes and probability of profits, etc. Because it's really a little bit of a different methodology or style necessarily than some regular, simpler option strategies. When you get into some of these more complex strategies, it just takes a little bit more time to understand them. But again, like everything else, if you slow down and learn it right now, you can speed up later on and just kind of rifle through these. So let's first take an iron condor, which is a very simple option strategy whereby you are selling a spread on either side of the market. So again, to use our very simple strike prices for a stock, let's say a stock is trading $100, we might sell the 105 call option and buy the 106 call option. So create a $1 wide call spread above the market. Same thing, a stock is trading at $100, we might then sell the 95 strike put option and buy the 94 strike put option to create a $1 wide spread below the market. Now, this combination of two spreads on either side of the market, the call spread on the top side and the put spread on the bottom side, creates our iron condor payoff diagram, where we generally want to see the stock move between our short strike prices. Now, that's a very simplistic way to look at it, but that is the reality. If the stock moves between our strike prices and ends between our strike prices, 95 on the lower side and 105 on the top side, so a $10 range, then we end up taking in the most amount of credit or all the credit possible at expiration. But what happens if the stock moves just a little bit beyond those strike prices? Well, we don't lose automatically. So a lot of people, when they get started, they assume wrongly that when a stock breaches its short strike, that immediately you start losing on the position and or lose at expiration, but it's not the case. And this is where break-even prices come into play. So let's assume, just for the sake of argument and for simplicity, that we sold the call spread on the top side of the trade, so the 105, 106 call spread, we sold that for 25 cents. So it's a $1 wide spread, we sold it for 25 cents. Then let's assume we sold the put spread for 25 cents as well, the 95, 94 put spread. Together, we've got a collective credit of 50 cents. 25 cents from the call spread and 25 cents from the put spread. This collective credit of 50 cents now moves our break-even point out 50 cents on either end from our short strikes. And this is where I think sometimes it gets a little bit confusing, but if you think about it rationally, why it does this, it's because we're taking in a credit, and that credit moves our potential range out by the amount of the credit beyond our short strike prices. So now that we've taken in a collective credit of 50 cents on this trade, Now what that means is that our true break-even points, the real points that we do not want the stock to cross, are 105.50 on the call side and 94.50 on the put side, 50 cents wider than our short strike prices. Now, yes, it is always based off of the short strike prices. You add and subtract the 50 cent credit to create the break evens based on the short strikes. We're not moving that from the long strikes, because your long strikes could be a dollar wide in this example, or could be $3 or $5 or $15 wide. The credit is always based off of the addition and subtraction of the credit from the strike prices of the short strikes. And I know that sometimes, again, that can be a little bit confusing, but what you have to understand is that generally the markets are pretty fair and efficient when it comes to pricing in these credits and break-evens. So if you have a wider spread on either end of your iron condor, then that means that you generally are going to take in a bigger net credit, and that means that your break-even points are going to be a little bit wider. Therefore, you're going to have potentially a little bit wider profitable range to catch the stock in. But in order for you to get the benefit of that wider range, potentially higher win rate, etc., you're going to have to take on a little bit more risk in the form of a wider spread. So it's pretty interesting when you actually really think about it and kind of see how moving these spreads and these credits and break-evens, how it affects the payoff diagram and your win rates, you understand that the markets are pretty fair and efficient when it comes to pricing these on trade entry. Now, when we start converting over to iron butterflies, the same concept is true, except now we're dealing with a much larger credit. And I think that's what really confuses people with iron butterflies, because now with an iron butterfly, we're selling premium at the money on both the short call and the short put. So to use our example from before, same general setup, if a stock's trading at $100, to create an iron butterfly strategy, we would sell the 100 strike put and the 100 strike call. And then we would buy the same potentially 106 call and 94 strike put. So we're still buying the same long legs. That part of it doesn't change. But now instead of selling options just a little bit inside of the long legs, we're selling options at the money. Now this generally is going to have a very similar overall potential probability of profit, because now let's assume that we take in a net credit for the inside legs of, say, $5.25. So that $5.25 that we take in as a net credit for selling the at-the-money strikes moves our break-even point out $5.25 on either end. So we effectively get a very similar, almost exactly the same payoff diagram as far as break-even points. It's just the distribution of our profits is a little bit different. So in this case, and I'm just like over-exaggerating how much you could probably take in on a credit, you might have to do wider legs on the long end for an iron butterfly, but just to use this concept as what we're dealing with to make it really simple and easy. In the case of an iron butterfly, we're taking in a massive premium that moves the break-even point out to somewhere around where short strikes would be for an iron condor. Now, the question becomes, well, why would you do one versus the other? And it really comes down to how aggressive do you want to be at selling premium? And how much room do you want to have in your payoff diagram to make adjustments or not? Now, there's a couple things we'll go through here, because I think that it really helps with this understanding of not only break-even prices, but also just which one to choose. When you're doing an iron condor, you're selling options far out of the money, replicating somewhat of a strangle strategy, and then buying options on either end further out than your short strikes. That allows you a lot of flexibility to make adjustments. Now, because of that flexibility, again, the markets, they give and they take. You can't have your free lunch and eat it too, right? So because you get more flexibility to potentially make adjustments and you don't have to worry about as much, you don't make as much money if you're right. So remember, iron condors have very low but very fixed payoff amounts. Anywhere in between those short strikes, you make the same premium, the same net credit. And that net credit, as we saw from our earlier example, could be 50 cents. It could be just something very, very small, 50 notional dollars anywhere in that range. But again, the trade-off here is you make a little bit of money, you know, when you're right, but you have the ability to make adjustments a little bit easier. You can roll up sides and, you know, create a tighter iron condor. You can convert it into an iron butterfly if you need to. It gives you a lot more flexibility. With an iron butterfly, you're taking in all of your credit right now. And what you're trying to do with an iron butterfly is you're trying to play a little bit more of an aggressive approach via a short straddle, which is effectively what an iron butterfly is. It's a short straddle with protection, long wings. And so now you take in a much higher credit so that if the stock lands closer to where the stock's trading now, meaning it moves more sideways, you make a lot more money on an iron butterfly than you would if you traded the iron condor. Now, again, there's no free ride, there's no free lunch here. What you give up now is you give up flexibility to adjust. So yes, you can adjust iron butterflies, but as soon as you start adjusting them, you have to go inverted, which means you start giving up your potential profit very quickly. So that's the give and take. In my opinion, I think in many cases, iron butterflies serve the purpose. And we know that from our backtesting and our profit matrix research, that when we go after some of the more aggressive option selling strategies, in the long run, those end up generating the higher risk-adjusted returns. It's not that iron butterfly or iron condors don't work. They do. They work fine. It's just that we prefer, in many cases, not all, many cases, to trade the iron butterflies and go after more premium now and really force the markets to make huge moves in a short amount of time and collect a lot of premium along the way. So hopefully this conversation has been helpful again in not only just calculating break-even prices on these strategies, but just understanding the makeup of them and how they work, right? Again, what's really important here about iron condors and iron butterflies is the credit that you take in and the short strikes that you select. And with those two factors, you can basically create a lot of different payoff diagrams. You can skew if you want to skew, you can be neutral if you want to be neutral, but those are the two main important things that you have to realize when it comes to figuring out what your probability of success is, where you win or make money, how much you win or make. And again, understanding that the markets are pretty fair and efficient. If you get something, you get flexibility in the payoff diagram, or you get the potential to make more money, you've got to give up something else. And just understanding that trade-off, that balancing act that has to happen in risk and reward is really important, because it helps you then craft these strategies and build these strategies based on what you think may or may not happen in that given expiration period. So again, hopefully this helps out. If you guys need anything else or have more questions, again, check out the show notes page. It's at optionalpha.com/show136. Again, that's just the number 136, optionalpha.com/show136. So let's get into the Trader Q&A segment.
And now our favorite part of the show, Trader Q&A, where we ask a question from one of our current members about options trading. Got a question you'd like to ask Kirk to answer live on the air? Just head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and hit the record button to leave a message. That's optionalpha.com/ask. And now, here's today's question.
Hi, Kirk. This is Massimo from Switzerland. I just want to tell how much I appreciated your webinar. It was really interesting. And I have just a question to ask about the money management. Is the percentage that I have to take into account related to the maximum risk, or is there another number that I have to check in order to evaluate my capital at risk? Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, so this is a really good question. Thank you so much for submitting it. And again, the question is really just based upon allocation. So when I think about allocation, it is always based on max risk. So a lot of people, when they think about allocation, they take in, they talk about credits and debits of the actual trade. And that's only true on potentially one side of the equation. So when you're executing an option buying strategy, and you outlay, let's say, a debit of $100. Well, if that debit of $100 is truly the most amount you can lose, then yeah, you can use the debit as the maximum risk. So that's how you would base your allocation percentage off of, that maximum risk of $100 per contract. But when it comes to option selling, you can't use the credit that you may have received because it's not the full picture. When you are an option seller, you trade higher probability of success for lower potential premium on every single trade. So if we take in a credit of $100 as an option seller, we're not going to base our risk and our allocation size off that $100 credit that we took in. Instead, we're going to figure out what our maximum possible risk is, if we're doing a spread like an iron condor or an iron butterfly, that's very easy to calculate our maximum possible risk. And if we're not doing a spread, we would base it off of the initial margin that's required or held by the broker. Now, that means that in many cases, you are going to be risking more than you could potentially make. And that's fine. That's all part of the options selling strategy. Is we risk potentially more than we can make. We just make that little amount of capital way more than we lose when we lose, you know, on a couple of big trades. And so for that reason, all of our risk is based off of maximum risk or margined risk on positions. That's a really key concept, and it's a great question. So glad that you asked it today on the call. Now, again, if you guys want to get your question answered here on the podcast or live on Facebook or inside the community, head on over to optionalpha.com/ask. Please click on the big red button in the middle of the screen and leave me a private voicemail. Again, there's no software to download or install. It's very easy to do. If you've got a question even from today's show, just go over there right now, optionalpha.com/ask, and get your question in so we can have it queued up for the next closing bell segment.
Now, the closing bell. Find out which stocks we're looking at right now, trades we're making, and hear our game plan moving forward.
All right, so in today's closing bell segment, I want to walk through an adjustment trade that we made to our existing IWM iron butterfly position. And what's interesting about this, and this is not necessarily a new opening trade, although we are opening new contracts in the next expiration, but what's interesting about this is that this is the second adjustment that we have made to this IWM iron butterfly position. Now, we talk about in previous podcasts the importance of making adjustments and how it breaks, in many cases, the zero-sum game if you are able to roll and extend trades for a credit, because it allows you to reduce your risk in the process, get some additional duration or time to be right, and in many cases also leads to potential trades that come back around and turn into winners, which I think this one could. I think it's a very good possibility this one could come back around and turn into a winner. So just to give you some context on where we are with this position, we initially entered a position in IWM all the way back in, let me just see here and make sure I get the right dates, all the way back on 5/22. So that was the initial position that we had in IWM, May 22nd of 2018. And at that exact time, yeah, the market was moving higher. In fact, it was kind of at a middle point. It had moved up and was starting to move back down, but then the market continued to move up from there. So at that time, we had sold on the IWM the 163 iron butterfly. So our short strikes were at 163, the stock was at 163, and we bought options out on either end $10. So we bought the 173 calls and we bought the 153 puts. Now, using our example from today, we took in a net credit between all the buying and selling of $3.70 for each of the contracts that we sold in IWM. So if you add $3.70 or subtract it from our neutral, our net price, our short strike price of 163, you get an effective break-even range at the time that we made the first trade of 166.70 to 159.30. So on the bottom side, 159.30, on the top side, 166.70. That was our effective range for this position. Now, $10 wide spread, we were basically taking on about $600-ish dollars in risk, right? That's what we're basically taking on, $600 or so in risk to potentially make $3.70 if we were to pin the stock at 163. Now, fast forward a little bit of time here, and IWM continued to move higher as we headed towards June expiration. So we get to June expiration last month, or in the couple weeks leading up to June expiration, and we see that we can actually roll this position for a credit. So we executed a rolling strategy on both sides of this iron butterfly. We rolled the call spread out to the July expiration, so 1 month out, kept the exact same strike prices, 163 to 173, so $10 wide spread. And we also rolled out the put side spread out to the next expiration month as well. So we rolled the 163, 153 put spread to the next expiration. We kept our position size the same, the spread width the same, all the same mechanical stuff we talk about and preach all the time. Now, when rolling out the call spread side, we took an additional 80-cent credit. And then rolling out the put spread side, we took in an additional, on top of that, 86-cent credit. So we took in a pretty massive credit at this point to roll the position to next month. Now, this is why I love rolling. Because if you're wrong in the position heading into the first expiration, and if you can roll for this massive credit, it only reduces risk in the position. Because let's walk through the scenario. We either take a loss now, and that's bad, or we roll for a massive credit, which reduces the potential loss that we could take next month. So why wouldn't you want to roll the position to next month, reduce your potential loss, even if you're still wrong? Because that's the worst case scenario, is what if I'm wrong next month? Well, if you're wrong next month, at least you reduce risk along the way by increasing your credit. Remember, all we did was increase our credit here. We didn't widen our spread by any dollar amount at all. So that means that we are taking in less and less and less risk on this position. Now we fast forward all the way to the July expiration month, and we're still not seeing any meaningful profit on this trade. But once again, we were able to roll these positions, and this is the trade I'm talking about here that we just did. We were able to roll our iron butterfly once again to the next expiration period. So now we closed out of our July iron butterfly, rolled our call spread side for a 13-cent credit, and then rolled our put spread side for a 60-cent credit. So this entire time, we're rolling and adding credits, and now we have worked ourselves up to a total credit of $6.09. Remember, we initially started with a credit of $3.70. So effectively taking in about, on the initial position, we were taking on about $630 of risk per iron butterfly. Well, now that we've rolled this position now twice, taking in credits the entire time, and not increasing the width of our spread, our $6.09 credit on each of these means that our risk has been cut down to $3.91, so $391 per spread. Now, what's so cool about this, and this is what everyone always misses with the concept of fair pricing and rolling for duration and breaking the zero-sum game, is that had we done nothing at the first expiration, we would have had full loss. But now in this process of rolling 2 months, not only have we gotten additional time to wait and see if the market turns back around, but if the market never turns back around and continues to move higher and blows through our strike prices, we have now cut our loss significantly in this position by almost 40%. Now, people don't account for that necessarily when you look at the initial trade entry. We don't think to ourselves, or everyone the misconception is that we're always going to lose max loss on these trades. But in this case, if we were able to cut our max loss on any given trade by 40%, maybe just a couple times every time that we do that, that dramatically changes the expected probability and payoff of that strategy. And in this case, what we've seen it time and time again, and we went through it just recently in a podcast episode, you can go back in time and kind of listen to those two podcast episodes, I think, where we had adjustments in TLT and IWM, show number 131. We took both of those trades, multiple month rolls, just like what we're in right now, and those trades went all the way back around and became winners. And so again, that's not something necessarily that people calculate or factor in, but it's a real, you know, it's a real thing that happens. It's a real potential benefit to rolling trades and calculating and recalculating these break-evens. So now that we've got this big, massive credit of $6.09, our new break-even points are down at 156 and up to 169.09. Now, what's so crazy about this is that at the time that we're actually doing this recording, the IWM is now coming back into our range and is now trading at 166.48. So even though it moved against us initially over the last 2 months and we got the direction totally wrong, we thought it was going to move sideways, it ended up moving up higher. Because our credits have now widened our break-even point, we've widened it so much so that it's now within the possible range of where the stock is trading. The stock is now trading inside of our break-even points at 166.47. Remember that our initial credit, our initial higher end break-even point was just north of this, 166.70, which was breached until just today. So the stock was trading outside that range until just today when it started trading back inside that range. So this is how powerful some of this stuff can be. If you really take your time to understand it, it gives you the leverage, the opportunity to extend trades, reduce risk, and potentially make more money on this by using these smart adjustments, by understanding and knowing your break-even prices. So that's why I wanted to use this as an example. It was a great kind of, you know, right now, live in the moment case study that proves a lot of what we talked about in today's show. So hopefully it helps out. And if you guys have any questions, obviously let me know.
Thanks for listening to the Option Alpha podcast. If you liked what you heard, please drop by iTunes and leave a rating or comment. Plus, you can get everything. Free email updates for future shows, transcripts, video tutorials, case studies, and more. Just visit our website at optionalpha.com.
All right. So again, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. And hopefully you got at least one thing out of it that you can apply right now to make you a smarter, more profitable trader and investor. As always, you can get additional resources, links mentioned in the show, and some related video training from today's show by going to optionalpha.com/show136. Again, that's just the number 136, optionalpha.com/show136. And until next time, happy trading.